right, we're going to pick up right where we left off, which was about three quarters of the way, I think, through my second lesson. And so we're going to try to cover the last part of this a little quicker and then go on to the third lesson that I have planned for you. I mentioned before we went to break, I was talking about people who had been very evangelistic, and Angela Ireland moved over to the Huntsville area from the South Carolina with her daughter Emily, and she's a very special person, special lady in our lives. Angela is one of those people who, if you knew anybody that might have a reason to have given up on God, she might have taken that path, but she didn't take that path. I want to tell you a little bit about her. Her son, young son, passed away. He had seizures, and he passed away in the middle of the night. When she woke up, her son was gone. Nothing that could have been done about it. Her husband left her over it, couldn't handle it. So there she is with Emily all by herself over in South Carolina, and she decides, we gotta have a fresh start. We gotta go somewhere. She works in the medical professional field, and so she could work anywhere. And so she decided to check out Huntsville. She knew some people there in Huntsville. Some of y'all know Glenn and Cindy Colley. She knew them. And she came over there. She ended up landing at Chase Park with us and started coming to the Bible classes that I was teaching about evangelism. She did not. She's one of those that did not give up on God, even though other people in her lives did give up on God. Instead, she started sharing her faith. She started asking a lot of questions in Bible class about, well, how do you do this? How do you in the midst of when you're going through things like this, how do you share your faith? So we spent a lot of time. She and Emily came over and ate with Marie and I a lot. She was on a face group book with a lot of other mothers who had children that were having the similar kind of problems that her son was having. And apparently, and she didn't really realize this, apparently over the years she had been very vocal about her faith to these people. And so she got a phone call from somebody over in Houston, Texas, saying, you know, I'm really struggling. I'm not even sure if I'm saved. And I remember you talking about your faith all the time. And so and Angela said, because this is right, just so happens, it was right when she was in the class about personal evangelism and getting really interested in personal evangelism. So she and I talked and said, and we talked about what I thought she should do. And so she asked the lady. And all of what she did here was over the internet. The lady lives in Houston, Texas. Well, at the end of that study, I found a faithful gospel preacher in Houston, Texas to baptize her friend. She's never met her in person. She's only known her on the internet. And they had a connection because their sons both had the same difficulty that led to these seizures. And then after that study, she was baptized into Christ. Well, it didn't stop there. She kept doing it. She got a call from another mother that was in the same group, and she said almost verbatim the exact same thing the first one did. And by the time it was done, this lady lives in Yonkers, New York. I think it's the lady in the pink jacket. And she studied with her, and they had a friend down in Orlando, Florida. They're visiting down in Orlando, and Angela had already been talking to her friend down in Orlando about studying and was studying the Bible with her, but she wasn't really getting it or agreeing with it. Her friend goes down and is there for a Bible study, and the friend actually obeys the gospel. And then they go back up to New York, and about 3 months later they come back, and with her is her sister, her brother, and her dad. And her dad is from Jamaica, and the associate minister at the congregation where this lady was baptized is from Jamaica. And so they had an immediate connection. So the one sister was baptized, not the friend, but the friend of the friend was baptized. And then 3 months later, the rest of her family was baptized when they went down there. All of that, every bit of that was done over the internet by somebody who very easily could have, because of the circumstances of life, given up. And instead of doing that, she did just the opposite. It made her dig even deeper and want to be even closer to God. I wanted to share this couple with you. I had been in Anchorage, Alaska for, I don't know, about 7 months, 8 months, is about 5 months after I had a mini stroke, and I got a call from Johnson City, Tennessee. There was a guy who used to be in Alaska, who used to be in the oil business and was a member of the church. And he had worked with the fellow that's on the slide in front of you, Tom Rainey, for 28 years in the oil business in different jobs. And he had been talking to him and Sherry for 28 years. They're very religious people, very sincere people, very interested in spiritual matters. And by this time in his life, Tom was 82 and Sherry was 76. And he called them from Johnson City and said, very good friends, very blunt with him, said, "You're getting old and you're going to die. And you need to get right with God. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to get your phone book out, and I want you to find the phone number for the nearest Church of Christ to where you live. And I want you to go there this Sunday, and I want you to ask the preacher if he will study the Bible with you, and he will say yes." And they said, "We'll do it." He gets on the phone, finds out which Church of Christ is nearest to their house, and he calls me. He didn't know it going ahead of time, but he called me because it was obviously the South Anchorage Church of Christ. So he calls me right after he talks to them, and he said, "Tom and Sherry Rainey, good friends of mine, known them for a long time. They have been very, very sincere about their faith, but sincerely wrong, like the Apostle Paul was when he was Saul. Very sincere. And they said they're going to be there Sunday, and they said they'll study the Bible with you. And if they say they'll do something, they'll do it." Well, Sunday morning comes, and here walking up the ramp, coming up into the building, here comes Tom and Sherry, Tom with his walker, and I'll explain that in a minute. And they come in, I go down to greet them, and I said, "Tom and Sherry," and they said, "Yeah," and Sherry said, "Are you the preacher that's going to study the Bible with me?" And I said, "Yes, I was told that you would study the Bible with me if I asked, so I'm asking. We'd love to study the Bible with you." Okay. So that week we started a Bible study with him. Tom was using a walker because he went into the oil business in Alaska in the 60s. Sherry was 16 when they got married, and he was 22, and her parents had to sign for her to marry. So they really weren't keen on her marrying this 22-year-old Marine, but they signed. They'd been married for all that time. Well, he goes up to Alaska to work, and while he's there, he realizes that he needs a pilot's license. You know, Alaska has a lot of people with pilot's license. So he's learning how to fly, and they take off from Seward, Alaska, and they're flying there north of Seward, and the fog sets in, and the pilot flies the plane into the side of a mountain, disintegrates the pilot, killed him instantly, and it broke almost every bone in Tom's body in like 1966, and I still don't get it. I still don't understand how he's still alive, and neither does Sherry. And he has screws and plates all over his body. He later became a competitive handball player and downhill skier after all of that. Well, about 3 years before I met him, so this would have been in about 2012, a red spot came up on one of his legs, lower part of his leg on his foot, and he went to the doctor, and it was staph that had been dormant in his body since 1960-something. And it almost killed him, and they had to amputate his leg before it killed him. And here's something else that Sherry said that was very impactful to me. Of all the people I've ever known in all my life, Tom has had more reason to complain about the circumstances of his life than anybody I've ever met. And she said, "Pat, I've been married to him for 60 years. She got married when she was 16. And not one time in 60 years has he ever complained about anything." And I'm like, wow, can Maria say that about Pat? And I'm going to have to answer no. And he was so sick through this period. Mike and Teresa went to study with me one time. They were up there during the middle of all this study. So they met Tom and Sherry. And we would study. Sometimes we couldn't study. I'd get to the house and Sherry would say, "I can't get him out of bed. He's too sick." Sometimes we can study for 15 minutes. Sometimes we could study for an hour. But every time we actually did study, when we left, she would take him back to his bed and put him in bed and study what we had studied, because his brain was going because of the sickness. They would study together for 2 to 4 hours just so she knew he was getting what we were studying. He was baptized. They were baptized on September 4th, 2015. And on May 31st of 2016, we had our U-Haul packed to drive down to Alcan to move to Huntsville, Alabama. And we went. The last people we saw in Alaska were Sherry and Tom. And while we're visiting, he couldn't get out of bed by that time. While we were visiting with him, when we went to the door to say goodbye, all Sherry and Marie and I were crying. And I told her, I said, we're never going to see Tom again on this side of heaven. It's not going to happen. He's going to die, and he's going to die fairly soon. And she said, you're right. He is going to die pretty soon. And she said, I wanted to tell you something before you left. She said, I think you moved to Alaska for Tom and I. And I said, I think you're right. And that's enough. That's enough of a reason to have come here. To Alaska. He died 1 year and 4 days after he was baptized into Christ. Just people that whole experience and the getting to know them was just incredibly impactful to me. And by the way, 82 and 76 years old, been religious their whole life. How often does that happen, right? Not very often. I love Tom and Sherry with all my heart. Last lesson for today starts with this question. What's my role? What's your role? What role do we have individually when we're talking about the local evangelistic efforts in a congregation? You're familiar with these verses in Matthew 5:13. You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt loses its flavor, how shall it be seasoned? It is then good for nothing but to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men. You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand. And it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. The point that I make with people when I'm studying with them from this passage is this. If you're going to be evangelistic, okay, and I hope that you make a decision to be evangelistic in whatever way that works for you, whatever role you can fill in that, for the Sanford Church of Christ. And if part of that, and it should include this, is letting your light shine. Even if you're not the one holding the Bible study, even if you're just influencing people for good, for the cause of Christ, here's what you need to do. You need to make sure your light is worth shining. Because if you're shining a light that's not worth shining, you're putting reproach on the Lord and on His church, and you don't need to do that. The reason why I bring this up now is because in Alaska, second only to me, well, maybe third, there's another guy too, but the guy who comes to my mind as being the most evangelistic in the congregation, guess what? Town drunk. He goes to people's houses to fix their locks. He's a locksmith. Fix their locks, change their locks, open their car doors when they lock the keys in the car, and he's talking straight all the time, talking to them about Jesus, talking to them about the South Anchorage Church of Christ with alcohol on his breath. Elder's been working with him, Van, for decades. He'd been there like 20-something years. And he'd do well and he'd fall off the wagon. He was literally addicted, right? He'd do well for like 6 months or a year and then he'd fall off the wagon. And we went to him when I was there and I told him what I just told you. Listen, I appreciate your zeal. I'm glad you want to share your faith. Right now's not the time. While you're struggling with this, is not the time to be doing that because you're doing more harm than good. When you do that, we've got to have a light worth shining in order to draw people to Christ, right? So, if we want to be evangelistic and if there's something in our life that ought not to be the way it is, let's change it before we start being evangelistic and let's get it right, get our life right with God before we start doing this. Does that make sense? It's vitally important that we understand that and do it. Local evangelism should be our focus, but the question is why? Why should it be our focus? Well, it should be our focus because Jesus said so. In Acts chapter 1 and verse 8, Jesus says, "And you shall be witnesses to me where? In Jerusalem, in all Judea, in Samaria and to the end of the earth. We're all familiar with this verse, right? This is right before he ascends up into heaven. He's already died. He's already been resurrected. He's already walked with his disciples for 40 days. This is just a few days before the day of Pentecost, right? Over in Acts chapter 2. And this is what he tells them. Marshall Keble, a name that's probably familiar to a lot of you, commenting on the phrase in Acts 1:8, the end of the earth, says, as even the smallest speck of earth or the tiniest, most insignificant corner of the globe to drive home that no place is too small, too distant, or too overlooked for the gospel. Christians are commissioned to be witnesses everywhere, down to the remotest speck. I thought about this verse a lot when we lived on the island of Saipan. You know why? Because I used to live on the island of Oahu in Hawaii, and I thought it was pretty small. But Oahu is gigantic compared to Saipan. Saipan's about 3.5-4 miles wide and about 12 miles north to south. And the top 4 miles of it, nobody lives on. You know why, Si? Because the U.S. battleships bombarded Saipan in World War II, and there's unexploded ordnances all over the north side of the island. You're not even allowed to go in a lot of the places. And Rob Adler, that's one thing I mentioned to you, Rob, Van and Turner and them know Rob. That was his job when he was in the Marines. He was based on Guam. He'd go to Tinian and Saipan, and the farmers that would find unexploded ordnance, they'd gather, they would find them and mark them, and he would come gather them up and then explode them. There's that many of them, right? So it's a very, very small speck. And I thought about this verse a lot when I was there because, you know, less than 4 mile by 12 mile island, and it had about 40,000 people on it, 40,000 souls. I love Brother Keeble's commentary on Acts chapter 1, verse 8. But I want to ask this question. When you think about this verse, where or what is your Jerusalem? I came up, I'm kind of a statistics nerd, a first generation total quality management guy with Tyson and Lean Six Sigma, problem solving, black belt, all that kind of stuff. Always been into process control. And I kind of divided this up into two parts, in a micro and a macro view. In the macro view, when you look at what Jesus said in Acts chapter 1, verse 8, you could look at the uttermost parts of the earth. There's the whole world, right? And then maybe you look at Samaria as the country you live in. And then you look at Judea as the state you live in. And then you might look at Jerusalem as the city you live in. And then if you look at the micro view, you might look at Jerusalem as being the site of the city you live in. And then you break it down to like within the surrounding neighborhoods would be the next closest level, all the way down to the street that you live on being your Judea. But where's your Jerusalem? Where is your Jerusalem? Let me explain it to you how I explain it to people. When I am teaching people about this, this is my Jerusalem. Who all's in that Jerusalem? You know, Van? That is my wife, my children, my grandchildren, and who else? No greats. Somebody else is in that picture. Who are you missing? Myself. Your Jerusalem starts with you. And if you're a parent, a spouse, it's you and your spouse. And then it's your children and your grandchildren and those that are closest to you. That is your first mission field, full stop. You don't have to go to India or Saipan to share the gospel with people. You should start because that's what Jesus said in your Jerusalem. And then it's like a circle that's expanding out. Then out from the closest people in your life, your very, very closest of friends and your immediate family, then it extends to extended family, maybe even at that point church family, and then maybe your neighborhoods like that, and it extends out. You know why I do it this way? Because the church has it backwards. The church is real good about, and believe me, I've done it before. The church is real good about writing checks to people in India, right? You've probably done it here. It's real good about that. And how good are we about our Jerusalem and our Judea being our family members and our closest friends and the people that live around us here in Sanford, North Carolina? we've just got the model backwards. And it's been that way almost everywhere I've ever been. Why is that? Why do you think that is? I'll tell you why I think it is, because it's easy. It's a whole lot easier to write a check than it is to risk a relationship with somebody you've known for 40 or 50 years. Because you start talking to them about religion or politics, but you start talking to them about religion, and you start talking to them about the church, the Lord's church, the one and only unique church of Christ, it can sever relationships quickly if you're talking to someone that doesn't want to hear it, that it's got not good news to them, right? So it's a lot easier. I think that's the reason why we do it. I think we feel real good about that, about sending money everywhere and anywhere and everywhere, and we're not doing a whole lot as a whole. I'm not talking about individual congregations. Some do it very well. But we're really good at evangelizing other people's neighborhoods and families, and not so good at our own. We got to start with our own Jerusalem. We got to do what we can with those that we have the most influence over. And that's exactly what Jesus was talking about when he said, Jerusalem, all Judea, Samaria, and the uttermost parts of the earth. The ultimate goal for local evangelistic efforts is to have as many people as possible involved in sharing the gospel with as many people as possible. We talked about earlier. Why? Because it's a numbers game. That's not being flippant. It's just true. The more people we can expose to the gospel by starting conversations with them of a spiritual nature, and then if they have any positive response, the closer we are to having a Bible study with them. If we don't ever start doing that, you know what your plan is? Somebody walks in the door. Are you happy, Brian, when someone walks in the door that's visiting? Yes, you are. That's not a plan. We're blessed when that happens. We're thankful when it happens. We do everything in our power to bring that person to a decision point about Christ. But that's not a plan. You don't plan on just waiting until someone comes into your door. That's not evangelism. So what do? We have to get as many people involved in talking to the people they already know and conversations they're already having. And then from there, like I showed you earlier, there's one guy that I showed you. I don't know if you remember, but by the time we're done looking at pictures, and I don't even have all the pictures of the people that are related to him or work with him that have been baptized from starting about 4 years ago, it's like 12. 12 people because of one baptism that happened about 4 years ago, because they just, once they obey the gospel, they want to tell everybody about it, and these people are willing to come study the Bible. We got to get more people involved in it, because our responsibility is bring as many people to a decision point about Christ as possible, and then let God do His part. We're just planters and waterers. We talked about that earlier, and God gives the increase. 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verses 6 and 7. And I want to close out with a few more recent conversions and their stories, okay? This has all been since we had Don Black. Some of you know Don Blackwell, and he came to do a gospel meeting, and it was just like a special emphasis meeting, and specifically we wanted him to tell his story, right? And those of you that know him know what I'm talking about, right? Don's been a fantastic gospel preacher for a long time, but his ministry changed after his accident because he was now somebody who could relate to a whole new demographic of people who could relate to him in a way that he would never have been relatable to them before. And that's exactly what happened at our congregation. This lady's name is Roanne Bird. And Roanne, 25 years ago, was approached. She and her husband Kevin were approached by somebody from the Gurley Church of Christ in Alabama. And they studied with Kevin and Roanne. And Kevin obeyed the gospel 25 years ago. So Kevin and Roanne have been going to the Church of Christ it might be as many as 28 years now, at the Gurley and then the Maysville Church of Christ on the east side of Huntsville, right? In all those years, Roanne never obeyed the gospel. And the lady that I mentioned earlier that hosted all those meals and Bible studies has known her the whole time because she was at the church when Kevin was baptized. So she's known Roanne for close to 30 years. And she's very, very involved and very excited about and very, very much forward thinking about evangelism. And you know what she told me when Roanne and Kevin started attending the church at Chase Park? because she's been involved in what I'm teaching you now for years now. You know what she said? Not going to work. This isn't somebody who's not into evangelism. This is someone who's really into evangelism. I said, what do you mean it's not going to work? She said, she lives across the valley within sight of Rufus Pyle, and he's her preacher, the preacher where she was at, and he worked with her for years, and she thought Rufus hung the moon. You're never going to have a better relationship with her than he did. And I thought, okay, all right, well, I probably won't have that kind of relationship with her. But you know what happened in the interim? After they started visiting there, they started coming to the Bible classes that I taught, and for 9 months in a row last year, in the three quarters of Bible classes, here's what we did. We were going to Lawson Road in Jonesboro to do an evangelistic campaign with Chandler and Sarah. And we made it a requirement for every single person that was going on that evangelistic trip and anyone in the future to have gone through this class. So we made it available three times. So I taught the same material about how to be effective in a short-term mission trip, a stateside mission trip. I taught it three times, three quarters in a row. Some people could only come this quarter. Some people could come this quarter. Some people could come this quarter. You know what? Ruan and Kevin came to it all three times. And during one of those classes, she had the idea, because Kevin's really sick, bad health. And she's in the doctor's office all the time, and she's talking to people all the time because she's on fire, she thinks, for the Lord. She's on fire, and she's talking to people about her faith, and she leaves, and she feels like she's leaving them hanging because she doesn't know what to tell them when she leaves. And so she starts talking to me about it, and here's what she did about it. She made these little pamphlets. And there's like eight different topics there. And in the middle of it, it's got, on the back of it, it's got a motivational thing with our information at Chase Park, saying if you have any questions, call here. And on the inside of it, there's a message about uncertainty or loneliness or depression, all these things. And then on the inside, there's a list of about six different URLs for Apologetics Press, Christian Courier, GBN, Lance Mosier's, The Authentic Christian, all of these searchable websites. If you have any question about anything related to the Bible, they're all searchable. You can go to any one of those and know you're going to get good information. So she came up with the idea, and I printed the first iteration of it, and then she made these, and then she went out and she bought displays so we could put them in doctor's offices and we could put them in thrift stores all over Huntsville, Alabama. And then Don was coming. And she said, I'm so excited to be able to go door knocking in preparation for Don coming to do his campaign. She told me that in Bible class Sunday, and I called her Monday. I called her and said, hey, I need to come talk to you and Kevin. And so I went over there Monday, and she was so excited. I had coffee ready. I'd never been to their house before out in the country. And we start talking, and then she brings it up. I am so excited about going door knocking. So we can share our faith and promote this gospel meeting with Don. So I said, Ruan, that's why I'm here. She said, what do you mean that's why I'm here? I told you earlier about the other lady that I said this to two people in my life. I said it to a lady named Sherry, and I said it to Ruan. I said, Sherry, from our time together and for what you've told me about your story, I don't believe you're my sister in Christ. Just like that. You know why I said that? Because she thought we were studying because she was my sister in Christ. And I just love studying the Bible, and I liked her. And the fact of the matter is, I'm studying with her because she's not in Christ. And she wasn't getting it. And the only two times in my life that someone eventually obeyed the gospel that they didn't get it during the study was with Sherry and with this lady. And you know what? The tears. And then the anger. And then the starting to ask questions. And when I left, just like with Sherry, I didn't know how it was going to go. With Sherry, it was 2 weeks later. My phone buzzed, and Sherry wrote me. She left the house studying with Maria and I. She left the house crying. 2 weeks later, the phone buzzes, and it's from Sherry. She said, we need to finish the study so I can become a Christian, because she believes she's a Christian. And it took her 2 weeks to understand what we were saying. With Roanne, I left with the same scenario. I had to say it. I couldn't just keep letting her believe that she was okay. And she wanted to go specifically to represent the Lord in this door-knocking campaign for the meeting with Don Blackwell. The next morning at 9 o'clock, I think it was 9:30, phone dings again, buzzes again, and it's Roanne, and she says, let's do this. Took her that night to decide that what she was hearing was true, and she wasn't a Christian, even though she has believed all that time. I got a question for you. What if I had listened to the lady that said it wasn't going to work? Do you want to be that person? Do you want to be the person telling someone who's trying to evangelize it's just not going to work? I hope not. Because you know what? A lot of people would have stopped trying. And I'm not saying that because it's me. I'm saying it because it's true. We have to take every opportunity with every person we find that shows any interest in the gospel, to take it as far as they'll let us take it. And if at the end of it they're not getting it, we got to say something. We can't let them walk away thinking everything's okay if we really believe it's not okay, right? She is absolutely, crazily on fire for the Lord. And so, I'm getting ready to come to Sanford. Maria's got the only car that's drivable, really, in Jonesboro to go see the grandbabies. I talked to Brian. Brian says, buy a plane ticket, right? So I buy a plane ticket. And I need a ride to the airport. Guess who I called? Wasn't the other preachers. It was Roanne and Kevin. Because she so wants to serve. She so wants to do the right thing and be helpful that I knew that if I asked her. See, and that's really important, especially when you're studying with someone. If you can get somebody that you're studying with to do something for you, to make them feel needed. And I'm not talking about manufacturing something that's false. I needed a ride to the airport, right? I could have hired an Uber. I needed a ride to the airport. So instead of doing that, I got a hold of Roanne. Because I knew she'd say yes, and I knew she wanted to serve. And guys, that's what the Bible talks about when it talks about doing good works. That's what she wants to do. And we need to help people do that. All right, this next one is Barbara Galvan. Barbara Galvan and her husband Heliodoro, we call him Arnie. She is was a Ukrainian Orthodox Christian, if you want to call it that. And he was a Catholic. And about 2 weeks before we met them, they had been at his denomination on the other side of Huntsville, and they refused her communion because she's a Ukrainian Orthodox. And it really set them off. It really made them mad. And what really made them mad, we talked about that earlier, didn't we? Sometimes you got to get mad before you listen to something. Really made them mad. So you know what they did? They live right down the road from the Chase Park Church of Christ. They said, we're going to try there. They didn't know anything about the church. They start visiting. First time they visit, here I come, right? Hey, I'm Pat, you know, like to take you to lunch if you'd like to go to lunch. In the short time that we've known them, she's been in the hospital 3 times and had 3 surgeries. So a lot of the times when we were going to study, we couldn't study. Well, we finished the study with Barb, and she was baptized into Christ. She's 71 years old. Finished the study with Heliodoro at the same time. She's from Chicago. He's from Guadalajara, Mexico. All right? She was ready to obey the gospel, and he wasn't. And I really have come to appreciate Heliodoro through this, for this reason. Because he had something that he had to get right, and he didn't have a way to do it right then because it involved a family member who lived in another state. And he said, I've got to get this right. I am not going to be a hypocrite and say I've repented of something before I have. So you know what he did? He got a hold of it. It was his sister. You know what? Why he needed to talk to her? Because on her deathbed, the mom said what her wishes were, and as soon as mom's gone, sister goes back on the wishes of the mom. And Heliodoro's got this in his heart for about 5 years. He said, I have to forgive her. I can't tell you I'm repenting if I don't forgive her. So he called her that weekend. He was on our back deck with me after we had dinner with a follow-up study, because Barb had already been baptized a few weeks ago. We were doing a new convert study with her, and he was there. He hadn't obeyed the gospel yet. And we go out on the back deck, and this 68-year-old guy just starts bawling and telling me this story. I just can't do it. I can't do this until I make this right. He went to his sister that weekend, worked through it, got back in town, called me and said, I'm ready. And that's his reaction after he came up out of the waters of baptism. He was ready because he had done the right thing, and he wasn't willing to be a hypocrite. Repentance is connected to baptism, just like belief is connected to baptism. You cannot be converted and become a Christian without believing and repenting and then being baptized into Christ. And Heliodoro understood that, and he wasn't willing to do it. The next one is Emily Smith. Emily, 46 years old, family not members of the church, but there's a Christian school in Huntsville, Alabama. It's actually in Madison, Alabama, called Madison Academy. Been a Church of Christ school for decades. And her family did not want her going to a public school. So you know what they did? They sent her to Madison Academy. She sat at the feet of Christian teachers her whole life, never obeyed the gospel. Never obeyed the gospel. Her husband dies. His wife dies. They meet each other. They get married. And they move to the side of town that Chase Park is on. They say, we've got to go to church. Well, I went to Church of Christ school. I just never did become a Christian. So they visit, and I go up to meet them. I'd like to take you out to lunch. And started talking to them, had a Bible study with them. She already knew everything we studied. She'd been taught that years ago. But guys, she left high school when she was 18 years old. She's 46. You're talking about a lot of years between those. And she hears the gospel and she obeys the gospel this night. Well, guess what? Her husband Shannon wasn't ready. And it was for almost the exact same reason as Heliodoro. It was a family member, but it wasn't his sister, it was his mom. And his mom was horribly abusive, and she had started doing it to her grandchildren. So, he gets in the car and he drives from Huntsville to Texas. He gets to go talk to his mom after he knows what he needs to do. And he goes and talks to her and says, I'm going to become a Christian, and before I do that, I have to tell you that I forgive you for what you did. You're not going to do it to your grandchildren. You need to change you, but I'm not going to stop it from allowing me to become a Christian. He comes back from that trip to Texas. He says, I'm ready. And then he was baptized into Christ. All of this has been since November that this has happened. And then we have Crystal and Brooke. Brooke is a daughter of two of our faithful, longstanding members of the church. Grew up in the church, didn't obey the gospel. She's 40 years old. Her daddy, Barry, and I are outside replacing a coil and a spark plug on my engine of my truck. She walks up. I've never met her before. You know why she walked up and I never met her? She'd been in jail. And Barry goes, you know, Brooke, this is the guy I told you about. If you ever got interested in studying the Bible, he would study with you. And I said, are you interested in studying the Bible? And she said, yes, I am. And so we set up a study for the next day, and Crystal came with her. Both of these ladies, before we were done with the Bible study, the last Bible study we had, both of them came to the realization, or were at least given the information, that their previous marriages made it such that they could never marry again. And I didn't know how it was going to go after that, Brian. And the next day my phone rings and it's Barry. And he said, these ladies have stayed up all night long talking about this. And they have come to the conclusion that they are the ones that messed up. And they know they can never marry again and they're going to have to stay single the rest of their lives. They want to be baptized for the forgiveness of their sins. And that's exactly what happened. Now, if you were to ask me, and I know we're not supposed to prejudge, right? If you were to ask me, and even if you asked Maria this, of these two girls, they've got very troubled paths, right? Pasts, right? If you were to ask me, okay, if there's going to be a problem here somewhere, we both would, and we both did say this when we were talking about it, it'd be Crystal. Guess what? Crystal's still coming. Her grandmother is coming. Her daughter is coming. And her daughter's boyfriend is coming. And not just to services, but also to the super senior class. Even Crystal's coming to it. And you're supposed to be 55 or older to come to that class. And they're coming to all of those classes. And Brooke has lost her mind. She has stepped outside of her mind. She's done things that we will not talk about right now that has caused her parents, since she's been baptized, to totally disown her. It's that bad. And if you had asked me, this has all been within the last 3 months. If you had asked me, I would have said, no way. She understood everything we talked about. She agreed with it. She asked hard questions. She made hard decisions. She obeyed the gospel. And less than about a month and a half after that, she is completely gone and she has destroyed her parents. Because they went from having a 40-year-old they had no hope for because she never obeyed the gospel, to watching her be baptized to have her sins forgiven and watching her fall away from that in that short period of time. Why do I share these stories with you? Because it's not right to just tell you the success stories, because when you have one that doesn't work, you're going to quit. You're going to stop trying to win people for Christ. Not everybody who obeys the gospel is going to stay faithful. Sometimes it takes years. Sometimes it takes a month. She's going back to prison for some of the stuff she's done in that period of time. Not to jail, but to prison. And that was after she heard the gospel. And after, even, you're not Teresa, you're Charlene. Even after realizing that her life was so bad and she had done so many things, but she was repenting of that and being baptized into Christ to have those sins washed away. Even after all of that, and she turned away from all of it. It's absolutely, absolutely devastating to the family. I saw her mama. Right before I left to come here, the day before I left to come here, and she pulled up. She's a teacher at one of our schools in town. And when she got out of her car, she had just gotten off the phone with Brooke, and she was a shell of a human being. She was absolutely destroyed with a conversation with her. Guys, evangelism is a messy undertaking. When you start talking to people who have not been in the Lord and they're adults, their lives most often are so messed up that it's very difficult to get them to obey the gospel. And when they do, and when they really do, like I believe Crystal has, because by her fruit she's showing that, at least so far, it can be an amazing change in people's lives. I just don't want to present to people only the good stories, because it's not right. It's not reality. It doesn't always end that way. But if we let those stop us, we're just going to stop in our tracks, and we're not going to try to win anybody. This one, Don Blackwell mentioned, because this was at the meeting that Don was at. In fact, I'll show you the next one. There's Don with him. Jeff and Shelly Campbell. Jeff's been attending with his wife Shelly for 13 years. Churches of Christ. About 5 years ago, he got esophageal cancer, and it was so bad it destroyed his chest. And they had to remake the inside of his throat. And in doing that, he now has a straight shot from his mouth to his lungs, right? And so it's not a regular trach. It's a special trach. And he was told by his doctors, you can never let anything get in that hole, right? And he, after listening to Don Blackwell speak and after listening to his story And realizing that Don had it a whole lot worse than he did, he decided tonight's the night. He'd been hearing the gospel for 13 years. And in the meantime, we have about half a dozen medical professionals in our congregation. They started talking. They started making phone calls. And here's what they did. Now, we got a few young people in this audience, but we're going to take a chance on this one, right? I don't think it's too graphic. But he has this hole in his chest that if any water gets in, he can aspirate and he can die. Right? So he's making a decision based on the fact that it could have very adverse effects to him. So they tried to figure out talking to these doctors and EMTs and stuff. So here's what they did. They took a tampon and they shoved it down into his throat and they taped the string down. And they had, if we go back, four people up there. Counting him, there were four people up there to baptize him because he needed to be under the water for a split second, out of the water, pulling it off and getting it out and making sure that it stayed dry so that he did not suffer any adverse effect while he was being baptized into Christ. 45 minutes of calls. You know what was happening in those 45 minutes? His wife was losing her mind. She wanted her husband to be a Christian more than anything, but she didn't want her husband to get hurt. They had to take muscle from all over his chest to reform his throat. It was just, it's a grotesque story because of the cancer that he had. And he was willing. He was like, we're not stopping. We're doing this right now. And he was more concerned that it took a long time to get the right information about how to do this, you know, than she was, because she was afraid my husband's fixing to be hurt or die. You know, this could possibly happen. And then afterwards, Don was driving back to Cookeville. And by the time this was done, after services on a Wednesday night, it was like 10-something at night, right? And Don stayed for that because he wanted to be a part of that. And they're just... Shelly, too, has had kind of a hard life, but I tell you what, she's just lit up. Absolutely lit up. She's been married to Jeff for a long time and been waiting a long time for him to obey the gospel, and he finally did that. We have to be intentional about our local outreach activities. Elders, we need your buy-in. Evangelism driver, whoever that is at Sanford, we need your passion. Congregation, we need your enthusiastic involvement. New converts, we need your excitement. And finally, we just got to leave it up to God. We got to let God do His part. Brethren, I really, really do appreciate being able to talk to you about real, personal stories combined with the Word of God so that we don't make it just about the stories. We make it about what God wants for us, and we only know that. So then faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the Word of God, right? Romans 10:17. And if we can combine those two things and we can integrate these things into our lives, we can be effective as individuals and congregations in winning souls in the communities that we live in. If you have a need tonight, whether it be to be baptized or to come back to Christ, please let us know as together we stand and sing.